You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Screen Heroes. My name is Ray and I am one of your weekly hosts. I am joined by my other two weekly hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hi, everybody. Just scooting my chair in here a little bit.
You're both very lovely tonight. Thank you.
Extra lovely
joining me.
I said very.
Right, I
but extra,
very,
of, is
no,
that on top of the normal?
No, just, it's very lovely.
Guys. Okay. Guys.
You're lovely.
I just want to be clear.
This is the last live episode of Screen Heroes in 2018.
Woo!
We have one more episode that comes out after this, but it won't be live, and then we move into the new year. Happy New Year, guys.
Yay. Happy New Year.
Woot woot.
Woot woot.
Not even Christmas yet.
Not even. No, not quite. Not quite. So what are we talking about today?
We're talking about we're reviewing Into the Spider-Verse this evening. If you haven't checked that out, then you can stick around for another 15 minutes or so while we talk news and then pause and come back after you see the movie.
And you can watch the Quick Movie Takes episode where we talk about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with our spoiler-free thoughts. That's available on Facebook and Twitter at Heroes Podcasts. It's there, I promise.
Exclusively
on Facebook and Twitter. And we for the first time ever, we use the Facebook's automated caption technology. And so if you just want to laugh, go check that out.
Yeah,
But that's spoiler-free, so you can check those out.
So let's dive into some news. First of all, Into the Spider-Verse won the box office, and it completely destroyed everything else out there.
Including Mortal Engines, which is Peter Jackson, so that's a pretty big one for it to be.
That's upsetting.
Well, so let's temper some expectations here a little bit. Like, yes, it was significantly won the box office, but this was not a big weekend in general.
No, it was not. But, Peter Jackson is a pretty huge force. When people see his name, they go, the director of The Lord of the Rings.
Sure, you but he didn't direct
I know,
Mortal
he produced
Engines.
It, but
and
still.
The Hobbit movies kind of made some people cold on him. But Spider-Man did break the December animated movie record. So it brought in $35.4 million, about.
That's a lot.
Which is pretty good. The Mule took second place at 17 and change.
So, funny thing about The Mule, that is Clint Eastwood's newest film. It is about this old man who got involved in being a drug mule. He just gets caught up in some bad stuff. The demographic for this movie, the reason why it got number two is because every, like, over 50 person who lives in the Midwest went to go see this film. I'm not kidding. The demographics for the map was hilarious. It was just right in this, like, you...
In the Bible Belt?
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody who went to go see it was at least 50 or older.
Well.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, younger people probably went to go see Spider-Man or... You
the
know,
Aquaman showing or Mortal Engines.
Right. And then, Wreck-It Ralph and Creed 2 are still in theaters. So.
And The Grinch took third place.
Right. Yeah. The Grinch is still doing well. It's hanging in there.
It never once won the box office, but it's doing the long haul thing.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's a good holiday film. It's, you know, family friendly, so you can take any kids to it and things like that.
Just any kids, not yours.
Still a kid and
just
go.
Grab any child.
I meant age-wise. You don't have to worry about the age for the kids. So
steal a kid of any age. That's what Derek is telling you.
So for some perspective.
Derek condones stealing kids.
I do not. So Mortal Engines brought in just under $7.6
million. Wow, that's really
with
bad.
A budget of $100 million.
So let's talk about Mortal Engines for a second. You and I went to go see it. And
yes, we did.
It is a really fun movie. It's a good concept. And the world building in it was the most impressive part, I thought, of the entire film. Like, Peter Jackson's known for the big epics. I could sit there for 9 hours and watch this world. Maybe not these specific characters the entire 9 hours, break it up. But, like, that world was really beautiful and fun and unique.
Steampunky.
Yeah. But it's thousands of years in the future. They talk about us as the ancients. Us, right here, right now, the ancients. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed to find out its budget was only $100 million. Now, obviously, that's a lot of money, right? But when you're talking about, you know, movies are getting 160, 200 million, 250 million at times. 100 million, you know, that's only 10 million more than Spider-Man, which is a fully animated feature. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty impressive that they were able to pull off what they did with almost half the budget of the other big blockbuster films that came out this year. It was good. I mean, I really liked it. I think if you like dystopian future sci-fi type stuff, then you should go see Mortal Engines. I think you'll have a good time. It's not a masterpiece, but it's definitely better than a lot of movies that I've seen in 2018.
Well, out of all the YA novels that people have adapted over the last few years, like
would you rank it versus Hunger Games and the Maze Runners or whatever?
God,
so I haven't seen the Maze Runner movies, so I can't say to those. I actually would rather watch this than Hunger Games.
I agree, and I'm a fan of the Hunger Games. Yeah, I'm a fan of the Hunger Games. I really enjoyed it, and I think that this was a better story. Characters were cooler. The world was just a lot more fun.
There needs to be more steampunk. There's not a lot of steampunk movies. When you think steampunk movies, you think Wild Wild West, Time Machine.
Yeah.
There's an animated Disney one, Treasure Planet.
Treasure Planet's very steampunk.
But other than that, there's really not that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy for the steampunk fans to get something that's expanding the universe. Hopefully this gets a sequel and they get to have a whole...
I would like to see it. There are four books in the series right now.
And there's a prequel series, too, that has at least three novels in it that I know of. So there's a ton of content.
The stuff here is just so fascinating that I'm going to dive straight into the books. I have to get them now. Like,
you should try reading them instead.
No, I think I'm going to go head first.
Okay.
Just literally, you do.
Now, you know, it has opened in some other markets. It's made about $35 million in other markets. So it's cracked 40, but on a budget of 100 plus marketing, you know, it's probably got to break even to see a sequel.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll have to kind of wait and see if there's any...
At this point, the things that'll help it is word of mouth, or it could get the Princess Bride treatment where the DVD and Blu-ray and home video sales are way beyond expectations. So, and word of mouth will help that.
Yeah. Now, one last point on the box office is, so Aquaman had a special Amazon Prime screening this weekend. For Amazon Prime members, it brought in a little over $3 million, which actually means it would have been number 10 in the box office this week.
But they were only showing it on one screen pretty much at all the theaters. So it's not like a lot of other movies get multiple screens when they open on their opening weekend.
Well, there was one screen.
Yeah. It wasn't like you got multiple showings.
I just think it's relevant because it made, with that in mind, with those restrictions, it made almost as much as Fantastic Beasts and actually beat Once Upon a Deadpool.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. That was Once Upon a Deadpool's opening weekend. So, you know, it that's promising for Aquaman, especially considering the international numbers. And that's what we're reviewing next week.
I imagine out of all the films that are coming out this weekend, Bumblebee, Mary Poppins Returns.
Bumblebee is 97% on Rotten Tomato right now.
I know, it's so weird.
Those are three huge films. I think Aquaman will still take the box office.
Bumblebee will probably win the weekend, especially with, you know, that $3 million going to this past weekend as well.
Okay, that's
cool. The international box office is promising for Aquaman and everything, but this Transformers movie seems to be a completely different direction for the franchise.
Yeah, it's kind of a soft reboot from what I can tell. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that's going to bring a lot of people back to the franchise. Like, even
Are you going to see it?
No.
Like, we're going to go see it, Ray and I, and that's not something...
Well, you guys go see a lot of movies because of your fantasy A-list, membership. Yeah.
But I haven't seen a Transformers movie since the first live-action one. So I didn't see any of the sequels or anything like that. I've read about
them. Of those movies, you're picking Bumblebee, or are you going to see multiple?
I'm picking Bumblebee.
Okay. I didn't know if you were going to go see Mary Poppins also.
Well, I'm going to go see.
Well... It doesn't open...
It opens on the 21st.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're not seeing it opening night. So,
fair enough.
Originally, it was not coming out this weekend, and the date must have moved. So, that threw me off.
Anyway, moving on. So, there is a little bit of Spider news, just to relate to Into the Spider-Verse. Since it did so well, they've been talking about spinoffs from the beginning, and I think that's a very smart move on Sony's part. They want to go with a Spider-Gwen in her universe, and they're going to have other female characters join them. Now, the stupid part was 2 months ago when they announced all female cartoon movie. Now it just says they're having Silk and Spider-Woman join her, and I think that is a much better way of advertising and marketing that, getting the hype around it, because when you put all female, then a large portion of the male demographic believes that you're going for a political stance, when it just means you want to focus on like a few female characters. You have three female characters leading a film, and it's a similar like Charlie's Angels vibe and kind of thing. It's not straight up just for women or just for men. You're like, these are the characters we're focusing on. Mm-hmm. So all three of them have current comics out right now, so there's a lot to pull from too, a lot with them together. I think they could produce a fun story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to touch on it too much because we haven't reviewed Into the Spider-Verse yet, but I have a lot of thoughts about what that spinoff sequel could be that are very positive. I'm very much looking forward to it. I just don't want to give anything away we talk about the first one. So
I try not to be like, it's a gimmick when they go like, it's an all-male cast, all-woman cast, all
male
cast.
Well, they don't say all-male cast ever.
Well, that's a very good point, but
it's always a minority, all-black cast or all-female or all-gay.
I mean, obviously, like, Black Panther isn't a gimmick to use an all-black cast, pretty much. But I don't think it is in this case. I think Ghostbusters was its own thing, but I thought that was a gimmick in that case, but... This one, I don't want to get into it too much because we haven't reviewed this. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and I'm definitely interested in that based on what I know of it.
I just think clickbaity headlines need to stop putting all female or all
men. Yeah, it's a weird way of describing it. Describe it as those characters rather than all female, because then that makes it seem like a gimmick when it really is.
Also, if you really think about it, the whole all female thing, like, that's really difficult to do. You're really telling me not one male exists in that. Like, that's just silly.
And I'm sure they exist, but they're just not the leads.
Now, what's really interesting about this is I guess this means that the lawsuit's been resolved, because for a while, Marvel Studios was trying to claim ownership to Spider-Woman because she's not originally part of the Spider-Verse. She's usually her own thing.
She's in the Avengers, usually.
So there was some argument in court about whether or not Sony owned the rights to her or not, because Sony owns the Spider-Verse. And Marvel Studios was claiming that excludes this one character.
Which seems kind of weird based on the character's name.
Well, that was the argument. The argument was that the name is the only thing that ties her to that, and everything else, she's her own standalone character that doesn't have strong connections to the others. Any stronger than any other non-Spider character does, you know?
So it's like saying Batwoman is not property if you buy the Batman universe. Because Batwoman doesn't really deal with Batman very much.
No, it's not so much that she's Batwoman. Batwoman is more closely related to Batman than Spider-Woman is to Spider-Woman.
I don't know much about Spider-Woman or Batwoman, really, to be fair. So.
But I'm assuming that this has been resolved and Sony confirmed their rights to the character. So, which is cool. I mean, I think it makes sense. We don't need to split up the characters in any more complicated ways. So.
And the comics have pushed her towards that anyway. She's had more interaction over the last 2 years with the Spider people and not just the Avengers. But she is still Carol Danvers' best friend and still hangs out with the Avengers a lot. So they haven't like completely manipulated the character.
And, you know, for all I know, the lawsuit was taken care of a couple of years ago, and so Marvel Comics just decided to roll with it and move the comics in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know when this was resolved. This is having this announcement is the first confirmation I have that the lawsuit has been resolved. So,
I don't know.
Yeah. So, Dark Crystal.
Woo!
Finally some news about the Dark Crystal.
Photos, casting, oh man.
Yeah. Oh my god. It's
an info dump, basically.
Yeah, Dark Crystal cast everyone you've ever loved and everything. Yeah.
So hitting the list up.
Oh, wait, let's just do like a quick what is it first for people who may not know.
It's a Netflix show, I think a prequel show.
It's a prequel. 10 episodes. Age of Resistance, correct?
It's like 1,000 years or something before the Dark Crystal takes place.
Puppetry, practical effects, not CGI.
Very sure little CGI involved. There'll be whole thing.
Yeah, magical effects,
right? The creatures aren't going to be made of CGI or anything like that.
Yeah, that's the. So
we've had like no information other than that.
There's been some sketches,
couple images. Yeah.
The sketches, and then there was like a single teaser where you kind of see a Skeksis, but it's really grainy.
Right.
Other than that, no news. So then this week we got a huge cast list, which just to name some of the names, if you're a film person, then you probably will know a lot of these. Taron Egerton.
Who's the guy from Kingsman.
Nathalie Emmanuel was from Game of Thrones, I guess. I'm not sure what character. You got Helena Bonham Carter. You got Natalie Dormer. Eddie Izzard. Mark Strong. Mark Hamill. Harvey Fierstein. Jason Isaacs. Keegan-Michael Key. Simon Pegg, Andy Samberg. Jeez. I mean, it's a loaded cast. Loaded.
Like, I've already read this, and you repeating it still has the same
level. It blows my mind every way that all these people are involved in a Henson property.
Like, these are, a lot of these actors have never worked together. A lot of these are big-time actors.
To be fair, they're probably not working together here either.
You know what I mean, though? But yeah. Right? Like,
on the same property.
You've got people who have been Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Star Trek, SNL, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, these are big-time people. It's really exciting. It shows that Netflix is not screwing around.
Yeah.
And I think that every year Netflix proves themselves more and more that they're throwing everything they possibly can to make quality content.
But are they going to be able to keep up that cast list? You know what I mean? Like, if they get a season two or something. Because they...
There's no way every single one of these characters is playing a lead. There's no way that every single one of these cast members are sticking around for the entire time. You know, some of them may only be in one episode. We don't know the level of dedication from them or the level of content. All we know is that everything about the show proves that they are trying.
Mm-hmm.
They know they have that card stacked against them. They've seen what happens just when people revisit the Muppets well, let alone anything else Henson.
Yeah.
This is a tricky thing to do, right? I mean, The Dark Crystal is a unique IP. It's a dark puppet universe.
That didn't really make much money when it first came out. I mean, it's kind of gained cult popularity.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing off the top of my head that's even remotely related is Labyrinth.
And they're both Henson properties.
Right. Yeah. But, like, you know, even other Henson stuff is much brighter and happier, you know, type stuff. Like, this is... I mean, Dark Crystal is one of my favorite movies. I love The Dark Crystal. So, the fact that they're taking it so seriously that... It is a focus on practical puppetry, that they are bringing in solid actors, many of which are voice actors.
Right.
You know, I mean, Mark Hamill is like the king of voice acting.
He's one of few, you know? Yeah.
Like, that's just, it's just super exciting. I just, they released some stills. We got to see three
main characters. Gelflings.
Three Gelflings. We got to see one Skeksis.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, but that was from the teaser, wasn't it? Or something like that.
I thought it was a new high-res image. Was it?
I don't remember. That one that you sent was not high-res.
That one that I sent was not high-res. It was a poor quality, but there was high-res versions of that photo.
Okay.
I mean, I think they look great.
Sure. I'm still... The jury's still out on Skeksis because I haven't seen a really clear photo of it. Fair. But of the Gelflings, yeah, I'm very impressed. And a lot of people are like... I guess they're still ugly like they were originally. It's like,
screw you, dude.
It's the character design. Like, you want them to change what they look like?
I take that personally offensive because for some reason I have been told that I look like Kira at least 7 times in my life. So, fuck you, random internet troll.
Look, they clearly look like Gelflings. There's no question what they're supposed to be.
I love how there's different skin tones too. Like, that one is green, and that's really pretty to look at.
There's so much difference in the characters because Kira and Jen had a lot of similarities. Like, they were obviously made the same way and the same skin material and like all this sort of stuff. These actually look like they have real skin. Like, obviously the advances have been made, and part of me kind of wishes that they would have done it the same way that they did the originals, but I realize that things have to change and nobody's going to watch a Dark Crystal Netflix show other than me that would be using puppets styled in the 80s. You know what I mean? So I know that they had to go this route, and I think that they did a really good job. I think that they're instantly recognizable.
They are.
They have different hair. The hair styles are all very different, very intricate. You know, there's the paint application is beautiful. I just think that there's, whether or not the series is good, I think that they'll probably win some awards for character design.
They should.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, you know, one thing to consider here is, you know, back in the day when the Dark Crystal was made, much in the way the Star Wars, the original Star Wars movies were made, most of that stuff that was practical effects were hacks. Things that were thrown together at the last minute because they had to find a way to make it work. And
asteroid shoes.
I mean, there's asteroids that were potatoes, right? There's jokes about that kind of stuff. But it's true, though. Like, they had scraps to work with a lot of the time. The cool thing now is we have people who grew up on the Dark Crystal that love and respect it, but now have a large sum of money to make legitimate components to build these things. And so, yeah, there's that little bit of it's not going to quite look the same. But, you know, I'll say the same thing I say to all my fellow Trekkie fans about Discovery is that you don't want cardboard and styrofoam.
Yeah.
You know, it just won't hold
then
up.
Then you complain about that. And I get that. I'm not trying to say that I'm not going to like those because it's...
It speaks to me, though, right? Because I love a lot of this old stuff, too. And it's sometimes hard to reconcile the new looks. But this case, it just looks really solid.
The other thing about the Dark Crystal, you were talking about what makes it unique, being a dark puppet and all that, is that Jim Henson made this entire practical world. There was not one human actor in the movie. It was all puppets, all create, like, every little creature in the background had somebody puppeteering it. Everything had its own story to him, and it's a lot of it is notated in, you know, some of the books that have come out about it. But I mean, it's, you don't see that level of world building anymore. It just doesn't happen. And I'm not sure that they'll go to those extremes with this. I kind of hope they do, but I won't be mad if they don't, because Jim Henson is a once in a generation type person, and they don't there is no Brian Henson is not Jim Henson.
Happy Time Murders proved that.
Yeah.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, from what I can tell, the people who are helming this project certainly are trying their best, you know, but they're not Jim Henson, right? Just, you know, that's important to keep in mind. You know, some of these creators are iconic because of what their sight was, what they could pull from their heads and put out into the real world that nobody else can pull off.
Right. And a lot of drugs.
I mean, I'm sure that helped.
Yeah. I'm not saying there's not a lot of drugs involved in this, because there probably is.
No, I mean...
They had a cocaine budget, so I mean,
I'm sure. Yeah. A different time.
It was a different world.
That was the era that got us, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Clue.
Right.
So, exactly. Yeah, it's Carrie Fisher employed.
Right, it's a different era. But yeah, I mean, very promising stuff. I'm really looking forward to seeing more, so...
Yeah.
We had the CW Elseworlds crossover last week. I know you guys haven't watched it.
Does it matter? The whole world spoiled.
So it's not. It is not all spoiled for me?
No, not everything is spoiled. No. They haven't had everything spoiled. But what's happened?
Immediately, the CW and every news site out there released that next year's crossover is going to be Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Which they definitely, like, during the crossover hint, you get a lot of hints that that's what it's going to be. They talk about the crisis, but there's been multiple DC crises in the comic, crises, if you will, in the comic book.
That is how you say that word.
So,
crisi.
How dare you?
Did you guys just break up?
He said, like, I can't even.
Look, we've done a lot of these episodes, all right?
Did we ever talk about the Avengers trailer?
Oh, Endgame. I guess we didn't, because of the Screen Hero Awards. We did not talk about Endgame. So I guess we can talk about that.
We got a full trailer. I mean, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, because it's been kind of talked about.
I'll tell you what we didn't get. We didn't get a Far From Home trailer yet, even though everybody's been predicting it every other day for the last 2 weeks.
I thought that was Avengers they were predicting.
No, so there was both. Oh. Because what was supposed to happen was Avengers was supposed to drop on like a Wednesday or Thursday, and then on Friday was supposed to be Spider-Man.
The internet says it was supposed to.
Yes. Okay. And so they kept getting, so the Spider-Man one keeps getting delayed.
And if people keep saying that it's going to drop, eventually someone's right? You know?
Like, if I come out and say, well, you know, Spider-Man Far From Home trailer is going to drop this week, and then next week I go, yeah, you know, I guess it's going to be this week. At some point, I'm right.
That's true.
You know,
there's been some, the suits from the movie have been on display. I know that they had the stealth suit on display somewhere.
Oh, did they?
There's very clear pictures of it, because it was on display. People could take pictures of it, so that's been shown already. So it's kind of weird that the trailer hasn't come out, but they're already showing the costumes in person at, you know,
I mean, the trailer's been a weird situation. I'm wondering if there's like maybe a special effects problem or something that they're waiting on for something to be finished.
We could do an entire like podcast episode speculating about Phase 4 and I think we have done an entire episode, as well as breaking down the Avengers trailer, just piecing bit by bit together. My favorite thing, like, I honestly can't wait to see which scenes are completely separate, but were put together to make it look like, like, everybody's really convinced that the Cap Natasha scene and the Ant-Man at the door is two completely different parts of the movie. That
I mean, I'm convinced none of the trailers in the film at all.
I did think it was interesting. First of all, RIP Cap's beard.
Right? Like,
the biggest loss for Infinity War. When it got dusted, that was the only time I cried.
But instead, I smirked a little bit the first time I saw that joke.
Yeah, I thought it was like dreads. I don't know what it was. Yeah, we had
Hawkeye's Ronin.
All of a sudden cyberpunk for no reason.
I'm guessing his family got dusted, so that's really cool. I would imagine. He has a sword now, so he's not just bow guy.
It would be 10 times cooler if there had been an infant on a papoose.
Like one kid made it?
Yeah, if the infant made it.
The
mom and the two older kids passed away, or like snapped. Whatever.
I don't like kids. Anyway.
There's a time gap there. It wouldn't be an infant anymore.
He'd be a toddler.
Did you know that, or did you notice that Cap was wearing a stealth suit?
Yes.
What's up with that? From Winter Soldier.
Because obviously that scene takes place in the past.
I'm not complaining because that's by far the best Cap suit that they've had on screen. And my favorite for sure.
That's a hard one for me. I really like the World War II one.
I do too, but I think that the stealth suit in terms of like, his functional suits.
People really seem to not like is the first Avengers one. And that's helmet. Because like,
Captain Puerto Rico.
But the helmet was bad. It was real bad.
I get it. They wanted it to be very bright and vibrant, you know, and it'd be a little on the comic booky side of things.
Yeah.
But it didn't quite hit the screen right.
Yeah.
He didn't look out of place. It's just he didn't look as good as what we've seen him.
Right.
So
it was a step back from his own movie, you know, because the World War II suit looks really good. Great, and then the Winter Soldier cell suit looks really good. And you have this other one in the
it's
middle.
It's just random. Yeah. Like someone made a weird condom head that he's got the helmet on.
But anyway, no, I mean, like, we don't know much, right?
They didn't give anything away, really.
No.
And there is a weird rescue placement.
Like the word rescue, when Iron Man is on his recording his message, he says, "Nobody's coming for my rescue."
He said that.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, there's speculation.
It's a huge spike.
That's perfect. That's what I was going for. So obviously, you know, people think that rescue is Pepper Potts in the Iron Man suit is going to be the one that comes and saves him, but that doesn't really make much sense to me.
It would be cool if she showed up at the end. We all know
it's probably going to be Captain Marvel that saves. If anybody saves him, who's going to be in outer space? Captain Marvel.
I mean, there could still be like
Nebula should be around somewhere.
Nebula should be ship with him.
Yeah, what's she doing?
Nebula and Tony should be in the ship together.
Arc reactor with a box of scraps in a cave. So
she now he's just sending voicemails.
Yeah,
he
can't find on a spaceship enough stuff to like propel himself to Earth.
Talkie, sir.
There's not enough nanobots to like shoot a little fart jet out to at least kind of send it towards Earth.
I don't know. The whole trailer was just kind of funny to me because like it tells you so little.
Yeah,
you know, and we already know that the Infinity War trailers were misdirections.
I mean,
to begin with.
It like, tells us a lot. Thor's album's gonna drop.
8 Mile. He's gonna cross 8 Mile one day, and
I'm mad at myself for not. I'm so mad at myself for not having that thought when I saw the trailer because it's so obvious. But like, even like the title Endgame was the first title that everybody guessed, and everyone's like, "No, that's not it, guys."
The Russo brothers came out. Yeah, they were like,
"That's not it."
The title was never spoken in another movie. Okay, guys,
it's only been spoken at least twice.
Yeah,
I can think of two times. So you're right. Avengers Endgame was never said.
Right.
Those two words next to each other were never said.
Yeah, so now they are totally untrustworthy. So,
right, I mean, that's the thing, right? And, like, I don't necessarily want to know. I want to be surprised. Part of my problem with Infinity War, if you listen to our review, is that, like, it doesn't feel like any shock and surprise to me because we have all of this information all the time. I would have rather them just gone on the viral push of the movie and not done a trailer.
Yeah.
Released a vague poster that just, you know, had the cool Avengers logo without even a title. Like, just call it Avengers and be done with it.
Even then, people are still gonna completely demolish it. I have heard so many arguments about what the purple light means. Is the purple light behind the Avengers logo? Thanos dying and like shut the fuck up.
Not everything has meaning.
You are reaching here.
Right, I want a black poster.
The Avengers thing disintegrating and then coming back together at the end, though, I thought was cool. Symbolism, yeah. Right, I guess, but we don't know. I assume so.
I was actually hoping it was going to be called like Disassembled or something like
that. I was hoping it was going to be called The Last Avenger.
See, that's a problem. Reassembled would have given too much away, right? You don't want to call it reassembled.
Literally.
You know, right? Like, you don't want to
They're like Legos. You're just kind of, here's Cap and Iron Man.
Oh my God. I want this, since they've already released it, I don't want any more, right? The poster's fine.
They're going to release more.
I know, but I don't want any more. All right, I want to be surprised.
There's going to be a teaser after Captain Marvel, 100%.
I just want full character posters. Like, they could be wearing exactly what they did, but I love the character posters. That's what I get hyped.
No, I want to see their Quantum Realm suits. Give us the official looks of the Quantum Realm suits.
I want them to release Avengers Endgame character posters where they're all wearing what they wore in the first Avengers movie.
No.
That's what I want to see.
How dare you?
Because that would be just
I don't want to see Cap in that suit again.
That's peak trolling.
All
right,
guys.
We've literally talked about the news now more than we're going to talk about Spider-Man.
Yeah, we have to take a quick break. We will be back in 30 seconds or less.
Hello, listeners. John here from Gamer Heroes Podcast. No, not that John. A new, improved John. Join all new hosts every Wednesday for discussion on all the latest games and gaming news. Hit us up to get the hottest takes, freshest memes, and deep, overly personal discussion on video games, though we reserve the right to also discuss board games, Dungeons & Dragons, music, art, society, and anything else that pops into our noggins. Level up your gaming podcast from silver to diamond with Gamer Heroes. See you on Wednesday. John out.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that advertisement. Buy whatever it is.
Listen it was to for Red Shirts and Red Hats.
Oh, okay. Well, listen to that show. Yeah. Let's talk about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Guys, what did you think about this new movie? Ryan, you go first.
Well, I started first last time. Make Derek start first.
Derek start first.
That's right, Derek.
I think this is my absolute favorite animation style. Kingpin aside, we'll get to him. But other than him, this universe looks so fucking cool. The animation drew me in immediately, like during the first trailers anyway. But being able to just watch a full 2 hours of it was just really pleasing. I love that style. The style is awesome.
Ryan.
I think this was my favorite superhero movie this year.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, I really, really enjoyed it.
It might be my favorite Spider-Man movie too.
I'd put Spider-Man 2 over this one, but I still really enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, it was still a great Spider-Man movie, and it brought characters that people had no idea existed because they aren't Spider-Man fans other than the movies. I was very pleasantly surprised. I hoped it would be good, and it did not disappoint me.
Yeah, so maybe spoiler alert, because I don't know how long we'll be able to stop from like talking about specific
things. No, we're
going
in. We're diving.
Yeah, I definitely think it's the best Spider-Man movie. As much as I love Spider-Man 2, I think this movie might be better. It's definitely my favorite superhero movie of 2018. There's no question for me about that. The way they were able to bring in characters from alternate dimensions without it feeling heavy and convoluted and clunky.
And not needing a ton of exposition as to what's happening.
Right? Like, you know, they got their little intros, you know, and that kind of became a meta joke in itself, and that was really fun for me. Like, it had some really serious moments, it had some good emotional moments, but it was still lighthearted and tongue-in-cheek, and just everything about it shined.
So many Easter eggs, too. And they were all done with a great respect and not, like, taking you out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Tons. I mean, I'm not, you know, as people know who listen to the show, I'm not like the Marvel expert or anything like that, but even I was like just catching things left and right. It was crazy.
Well, yeah, even if you're only a fan of the movies, I mean, you get a reference to Spider-Man 3 away, really early on with the dance scene where he's like walking down the thing.
All three Spider-Men.
I mean, basically, when Peter explains who he is, he basically explains the plot of the original trilogy.
Yeah. You get to see him holding the train, right? That's a reference to Spider-Man 2.
The upside-down kiss with Mary Jane.
Upside-down kiss.
The car that flies into the restaurant.
Holding the two halves of something together, yeah. Which is obviously from Homecoming.
Yeah.
There was, and that was all done in, like, the first 20 minutes. I mean, it was... and it didn't feel out of place. But the whole time I was like, ah, that's cool. And I'm sure, you know, people who are even more casual fans than I am, which there's not a ton of, but they were probably even more excited that they could pick up on those references.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They weren't deep cuts.
No, there was just so much though.
So let's go by this character by character. I feel like that's the best way to do it. Let's talk about Miles. He's our main character.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think about Miles as a whole?
I loved seeing him get his powers and handling it in a universe where it already existed,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we've only really seen Tobey Maguire's... I haven't watched the Amazing Spider-Man movie, so I haven't seen the...
Andrew Garfield
one. But, you know, Tobey Maguire got his origin story, Tom Holland didn't, right? So I've only really seen the Spider-Man origin one time on the big screen. And so it was really interesting to see Miles struggle with, like, you know, the hand sticking and his senses and all that, but at the same, like, flipping over the car. But at the same time, like, he's also seeing these things happen to a comic book character that's based on a real person in his universe. Like, that's just super different. That's really unique. We don't really have that,
mm-hmm.
right? Most of our superheroes, there's exceptions, like Black Lightning, for example, but there's a lot, most superheroes exist in a universe where superheroes don't exist in any fictional sense. Right? Like in Batman's universe, there's not comic books that people are reading in Batman. But in this, Miles is reading Spider-Man comics that are actually based off of the real Spider-Man who, you know, we watch die in this movie. Yeah. Right? Like, it's super interesting. I just found that fascinating. But I like that he's got, you know, he's got an interesting relationship with his parents. You know, he's not, doesn't really want to do the prep school thing, but his dad, you know, really wants him to succeed. And I can kind of relate to that type of familial pressure to do better, because what we don't get from Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man or even Tom Holland's is that type of parental upbringing, because his parents are never in the picture. So I like that quite a bit.
I mean, you don't get that from any Peter Parker Spider-Man. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I thought he was great. It's nice that that they have a minority character, two different minorities, because, you know, now there's a lot of kids that have no idea that, you know, a lot of little black kids or Hispanic kids that have no idea that there's a Spider-Man out there that is half of each of those.
And now they do.
And now they do. And he's making a ton of money at the box office. So, you know, there's a lot more. That's going to make more people come and see it.
Yeah,
and absolutely. So I think it's great. They're going to have somebody to look forward to.
Yeah, the representation was really fantastic. They didn't shy away from either culture. And they did a great job of showing, not telling. Like, he didn't have to say, I'm a Afro-Latino.
And they also didn't do subtitles for the Spanish parts, nope, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. You just got it by context, yeah, and tone, and you don't need to understand the words to understand the meaning of what she's saying.
Yeah, I love that his dad's a cop, right? Because you have that vigilante thing in a lot of superhero roles, right? Where there's the cops want to stop the hero.
Well, and in the Amazing Spider-Man movies, Gwen Stacy's dad is a cop. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so...
That's true. Know. So I guess, I mean, you do get to see it there, but you don't get to see it in other heroes.
Right.
Right? Like, it's not really a thing on you know, the other Avengers, Justice League level heroes. And so it was kind of cool to see that, like, it's straight up his dad.
Yeah.
You know, like, in this that scene that clips in the trailer, but it is a really cute moment, though.
When he drops him off at school.
No. At the end.
Oh, yeah. I love you.
I love you, officer. You know, like, it's just, like, super cute. Like, I don't know. It's a good moment. The personality of Miles is just, it just feels good. It feels real.
Yeah.
He just feels like a normal kid. It's authentic,
but it's also, it's not immature, but it's definitely young. There's a youthfulness to him as opposed to Jake Johnson's Spider-Man. So let's move on. Let's talk about our Spider-Men. I think we should talk about the Chris Pine one first. And then move on to Jake Johnson. Because so, they're two drastically different Spider-Men.
I love that the trailer kind of hides that from you. Because it definitely caught me off guard.
Yeah.
Like, I'm listening, I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like Jake Johnson at all. It totally caught me off. I like the idea that... In school I studied philosophy. And I find the idea of the infinite universe theory and all that really
multiverse.
Well, yes, the DC multiverse, yes. It's really interesting, okay? I find it fascinating that any time that something could have multiple outcomes, all of those outcomes do happen in alternate realities, right? So there's a slightly different universe where we're just wearing different color shirts or, you know...
There's one completely different when we're all clowns.
Right, exactly. We're all gummy bears made of Jell-O. And I like these concepts. Gummy bears
aren't made out of Jell-O?
In this universe, they are. See, like that's the point.
Do we eat ourselves when we get hungry?
I mean, maybe in some universe you do, right? Like that's the point, right? And I love that.
We should explore this further.
This is a thing that
the Screen Heroes multiverse.
This is a thing though that scientists really study, and it's something that I've always found really fascinating. And to see it put to screen is very, very rare. Fringe did it with only two universes, and that was complicated enough for people to follow.
You aren't
going to
go Ben Wyatt on us, are you?
That was as far as I was going to go with Fringe. It's not something you see a lot. Star Trek has the mirror universe. There's some alternate realities there too. But they never really hit a bunch all at once. And this one does. I mean, we're basically living in five realities at the same time throughout most of this movie. And each character is able to keep their identity. And so, I don't know. I just find that super fascinating.
Okay. I mean, I thought it was cool, yeah. I don't really know... where to go with that.
But no? Okay.
No, there's definitely some fun philosophy and science behind it all.
I didn't really care about that as much. I just thought it was cool that they did it in a way that didn't need you don't need a doctorate to figure out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was easily understandable for everybody.
But it's little things, right? Like the Chris Pine Peter Parker is the, quote, successful Peter Parker who has everything. He's got, you know, the chiseled jaw and the blonde hair, right? And
he's also only been Spider-Man for 2 years as opposed, like, he didn't get his powers at 15 like the Jake Johnson one did. He got it when he was 24. He was already a successful working adult and knew about responsibility. I bet you anything he did not have the run-in or the incident where he became a pro wrestler for a little while.
Right. That's true. But then you have the Jake Johnson Peter Parker who's, you know, he's kind of the one most of us are probably used to thinking of when you think of Peter Parker, who doesn't necessarily have the best luck and he's always short on money because he doesn't really have a great full-time job. And, you know, he and Mary Jane don't always work out, and in this case they didn't.
John Romita Jr. said when he was writing Spider-Man, everybody always asked him who was his favorite Spider-Man villain to write, and he said the universe, because the universe hates Peter Parker. And that is definitely Jake Johnson's Spider-Man. The right. Universe hates him, man.
Then that I think I like those differences, right? His hair is a little bit different.
He's wearing sweatpants.
Well, that's because his legs are all the legs in his suit are all jacked up. That's why he puts the sweatpants on. Like, it's cute though, right? Like, I just these tiny things. And then when they bring in the other spider characters, right? You bring in Noir Spider-Man, okay? And there's just wind blowing, and they even comment like, "Where did the wind come from?" Is wherever I am, the wind follows. You know, like,
and just, having Nicolas Cage voice that was perfect.
It's really hard for that performance, that character, not to steal the show for me.
And it did for me, because I'm a huge Nicolas Cage fan already, yeah.
Well, the fact that Penny Parker was animated as if she was in a standard anime, and John Mulaney's...
Peter Parker.
Like he was, Peter Parker, Looney Tunes.
Straight up Looney Tunes.
Straight up.
So good. All three of them having different animation styles was... pretty on the nose and
and if you watch our like One Punch Man review, and me and Derek did a One Punch Man review,
I was there. I didn't have much to say, but I was...
Oh, were you on that one? it was
you never know.
You could listen to it and she could not be there, but one of my favorite things about One Punch Man is the use of the different animation styles and the statement that actually the animation style is making, and I think that they did a lot of that with this too. You got whole different personality types based on how the character was drawn. You know, you could look at that character and go, this is the personality type this character's probably going to have based on the art I'm looking at. And it was. And they did a really good job with that. I mean, and I respect that.
The noir one, I think, is for me the most interesting because...
he's always black and white.
Always in grayscale, right? And they even comment on it. And then what do you do with that? So the writers have this character who's a monotone character in this incredibly vibrant, sophisticated, animated world. And what do they think about? A Rubik's Cube.
Right.
And that is the funniest fucking thing to me.
Yeah, he's going to take that back to his universe. Yeah. Yeah, that was so good.
Like, just like he's trying to solve it on the couch. He's like asking which color. Like, it's just... like, it's just one of those small notes that helps show the fish out of water, because these people aren't home.
Right.
Right. The only person who's home here is Miles, and he's not really home because he just got his powers yesterday.
Right.
You know, so all of these characters, all of our heroes are fish out of water in the entire movie, and it's super interesting. Except
the only one that didn't really seem like a fish out of water was Gwen Stacy.
Yeah.
She seemed like she pretty much had it together.
So,
yeah,
let's talk about Spider-Woman, because in this one,
is she Spider-Woman? I don't. Yeah, I was going to bring that up earlier, but I don't.
In her universe. I've always heard her
referred
to as
Spider-Gwen. That's all I've always heard her referred to, because Spider-Woman is her own character.
Mm-hmm. So, a couple different confusing things. Spider-Woman is her own character, and there's been four different versions, but Jessica Drew is kind of the go-to. When Spider-Gwen came out, the fans named her first, and they just kind of had to go with it. So, the comic was called that, because that's what the fans called her.
It was called Spider-Gwen?
It was called Spider-Gwen. But in her world, how Gwen Stacy got her powers, she was bitten and Peter Parker passed away instead of the other way around. Right, which they
cover that in the movie.
But she is Spider-Woman, because there is no other Spider-Women in her universe. Okay. And then when she...
It's just confusing as a for somebody who's a very light fan of that kind of...
Well, now she goes by Ghost Spider, because it doesn't make sense for her to go by Spider-Gwen and give up her, her first name. That.
And it is a little confusing, right? Because Spider-Woman has her own comic book, and she looks very different from Gwen Stacy. The costume itself is just incredibly different.
It's almost opposite.
Yeah.
I mean,
so it can be really confusing. But, I mean, her character is super cool. I love that haircut that she ends up with in the movie. That's like, I don't know, I just love that. I thought
really attracted to it.
Apparently I am. Like,
he likes the Natalie Dormer, I think.
She looked good with that, too. Yeah. The character was super cool, right? She's the only one who kind of has it together, because the only other experienced Spider-Man from a relatively normal universe is the Jake Johnson one, who's the down-on-your-luck Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Right? The other three are so removed from Miles' reality that they never really fit in.
Yeah.
Gwen can do that. Like, she's a student. She's a scientist. She can just fit in because her reality...
She can blend in.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So I like that aspect of it. I kind of wish we had been able to see a little bit more from Peter Parker and Penny Parker.
I was actually fine with the amount that they were given. I thought if it was any more, it would have started to get a little more convoluted.
You think so?
And I don't know. I thought it was pretty perfect the way it was. Those aren't popular characters. No. Not a lot of people are going to go, I relate to Peter Parker. You know,
so they don't need the development. I'm surprised with how much they were in it. Like, they gave them backstories and let them have their moments in both.
The way they did the backstories was interesting too, where they were like, for the fifth and final time, this is my story or whatever. I thought that was great.
And Miles at the end where he's like, all right, guys, you know the deal.
And then at the very, very end, they did the same thing with the end credits guy.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2099.
I did like that Peter Parker got to use Looney Tune type physics during the battle sequences.
Yes. Toon Force.
You know? Yeah. Because, like, that's something that you don't get to normally see in a comic book superhero thing, especially in the 21st century with the more hyper-realistic superheroes. If I could,
I'd give you guys materialized hammers out of nowhere all the time. I appreciate
that.
Like, the anvil thing was just, you know, that's so... spot on Looney Tunes, and who else can do that? There's no other character that can pull that off.
Not in the Marvel Universe.
You know? I mean, DC Universe doesn't really have that either. They have the Zoo Crew, but they're not that toony.
No.
You know? So, like, this is a unique thing. I mean,
Squirrel Girl can pull that off, probably.
Maybe.
But anyway, continue. Your point still remains.
Right? Like, it's just, I like that they were all given an opportunity to do things totally separate from what the person from that timeline is supposed to be able to do.
Right.
You know, I just thought that was really interesting.
So even though they're not in their own realities, their own universes, they're able to bring part of their universe over.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the villains. Let's talk about Kingpin and Doc Ock and Prowler.
So Prowler was cool. Ali, he is such a good freaking actor.
I didn't know he was in this, so that was really cool to...
I'm a little sad that they killed him off. I know that's kind of part of the character and the journey of Miles, but I feel like you could have probably stretched that into a different film.
I don't know.
It's just, you know, like, you have to have some tragedy for Miles.
I just really hope they don't do it to Donald Glover.
Oh, jeez, right? I think...
If you don't remember, Donald Glover plays Aaron Morales in
Homecoming. Yeah, I'm not sure most people caught that. It's a pretty quick moment, but no, my only problem with the movie is the design of Kingpin. It's the only thing that seems to not make any sense in that universe.
I like Kingpin's design. The whole point of his character in the comic books is that he's just a huge freaking guy that's supposed to tower over everybody. And I thought, how do you do that in an animated universe and really make it come across screen? And there were people that laughed every time he came on screen in my theater.
Oh, that's rude.
That's not cool.
And so, you know, I mean, I get that it didn't work for a lot of people. I didn't have an issue with it. I thought it suited the style and what the character represents. I thought that was fine. Personally, it didn't bother me that much.
I think it just went too far. It moved away from fitting, because it felt like I was waiting to find out that he's a Kingpin from a different reality, and that's why his animation style is different. Because they gave me that expectation with the other characters, right? The other spider people look different because they're from different realities.
So I actually thought it looked like the vampire characters in Venture Brothers. He totally reminded
That's
me
kinda
of
funny,
them.
Actually. He looked like a refrigerator with a head.
He did.
Which is kind of how Kingpin is supposed to look.
But it was too exaggerated for me, is all.
Okay.
I mean, I know the Kingpin character is supposed to be the larger than life guy, but it went a little too far for me.
So Doc Ock was my favorite villain.
She was cool.
I love the way that her...
Is there a female Doc Ock in the comics?
In Miles University.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was an actual thing or if they just went that route.
Nope, in Miles Universe, she's female.
Yeah.
I like how they remind us throughout this whole thing that Miles Universe is not our universe. It's not Marvel 616. That's Jake Johnson's universe. That's where we belong.
Mm-hmm.
So, I liked her reveal. It was so interesting, and you know, you find out she's kind of this sadistic person who likes torturing subjects and watching them die very slowly. Like, you think she just might be manipulated into working for Kingpin, like he's using her, and no, she's in this. And I loved the line, like, I really fixated on the line, like, no, my friends call me Liv, my enemies call me Doc Ock.
Right. Like, that was a good line. Yeah.
And, well, yeah, the whole reveal was good, because I had no idea.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a surprise for me. I have no idea that there was a female Doc Ock in the comics or in Miles Universe, so.
I wasn't expecting that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to say about the villains, but that you guys haven't already said. But yeah, I liked her, and I liked Kingpin, and I liked Prowler. I thought that was all interesting. I didn't realize that Prowler was going to be his uncle. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Literally, I knew Miles Morales, and I know he's Spider-Man, and that's all I know about him. So all of this stuff was very new to me, which is maybe why I enjoyed it more.
Oh, I absolutely loved it. Like, I'm nitpicking here.
No. I'm not saying loved it more to you. I meant loved it more than, like, a character I'm very familiar with.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Soundtrack was super cool. Really enjoyed the soundtrack.
Oh, my God. The soundtrack was brilliant.
Score was really solid, too. I'm actually a little frustrated because as we move on technologically, the ability to just buy CDs is becoming more and more difficult. And so being able to snag the soundtrack and the score to this movie, as well as Aquaman, when we talk about that next week, it's really difficult to get them.
Yeah, you just go onto Spotify and go Aquaman.
But I have to pay for it. Like, this thing, I need a subscription, right? I have to pay for Amazon Music, or I have to pay for Spotify. The thing is, I listen to a lot of different eclectic things, and Spotify doesn't have everything I want. Sometimes I just want to pop in my CD in my car, you know, and listen to what I want to listen to, or something like that, without having to pay $120 a year to do it, you know.
So one of our watchers in Twitch right now is talking about the execution in the fight scene at the very end of the movie, and I have to agree, the colors were impressive. Everything from watching Miles' universe collapse in on itself after everybody's gone, and then watching everybody leave, and each exit was a different color and different mood. God, it was just so well done. The colors in this were brilliantly used, and
it kind of showed how strong the animation in this movie is, because we've been subjected to a lot of movies in the 21st century that are, quote, live action, that use CGI that's just a jumble of junk moving around, right?
And the Transformers are horrible with
that's
it.
That's a great example.
It's impossible to keep track of every character in all the fight scenes when there's six of them fighting and metal shards going everywhere.
It's another good, that's a great example of it. And in this case, we have a movie that I think had a more complicated job to pull off and did it so well. Everything was discernible. You could see it. There was no just jumbled messes anywhere. It was all very purposeful. And it just, it showed that this animation style is something very unique that I think could be the future of animation.
Sony is kicking ass. Tetris and Tacos has a point. Disney makes very cookie cutter superhero films. We could probably sit here and detail out just exactly how Captain Marvel is going to play out. And most likely we will not be wrong. We'll have 75% of the movie kind of detailed out. And a few things might surprise us. But we know how Marvel movies are. Sony's made two superhero movies this year, and they've both exceeded expectations for Sony. Now, I'm not saying Venom is a fantastic film. I'm saying I enjoyed it, and it's dominated the box office.
I mean, that's the key, right? Like, people can dog on Sony's library all they want, but this year, they're making good decisions. These two movies are doing incredibly well. And, you know, Venom, I think the problem with Venom is it just wasn't what people were expecting it to be. But, you know, here it is crossing the $850 million mark for a solo origin story.
It's a shame that they canceled Black and Silver before we even got to see anything for it. Like, I think they should go back and try and do a Black Cat and Silver Sable movie. Now, I don't know. Those characters have very little to do with each other. They rarely come across each other. Silver Sable is used so few and far between that, like, maybe just make a Black Cat film. But,
well, some of it is, I think, the ways Venom and Into the Spider-Verse were successful were basically opposites of each other. Venom decided to just kind of throw the comic book canon to the wind and write their own story. And because of that, we all got kind of something we weren't expecting. On the flip side, Into the Spider-Verse decided to dive so hard into the comic book universe that they gave us probably the most comic booky movie ever made.
Yeah.
You know, it was so ambitious to do what this movie does. No one else has had the guts to try and pull off something like this with five different timelines that coexist with different animation styles, tones, music. Like, no one's done that.
Right.
Because it's really risky. Like, I can't believe that anybody tried to pull it off, let alone doing it so well.
Right. So I will say this before we go. We haven't talked about this, but I was not emotionally ready for that Stan Lee cameo.
Yeah, it hit me right away. As soon as his first line was, "I'm gonna miss you," or something along those lines, and I was like, "Oh my god!" Like, I haven't gotten choked up about the Stan Lee thing at all. But then I immediately took a sharp breath and went, "Oh my god!" And they filmed this, and he did. You know, nobody knew.
The three of us are kind of burdened by knowledge sometimes, and when we know Stan Lee's history to a certain degree, and when his wife passed away last year, we kind of all knew that something was going to happen. And, you know, he retired and then he unretired and all this stuff came out about, so much, it sounded like he was in some really bad hands for a while, like his managers and handlers, and it sounded like it was at risk. So I was really upset when he passed, of course, but seeing him in this, oh my gosh, it was a bit more emotional than I was expecting. Like,
I didn't know there was supposed to be a Stan Lee cameo, so it was,
I hadn't even thought about it. Like, it caught me off guard.
That was the thing. Like, once it happened, I was like, well, of course he had a cameo in this, right? But then at the same time, like, I wasn't thinking it was going to happen. So yeah, it definitely caught me off guard, and it being the very first, it's the first thing we've seen him do since he died.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's a big moment, and it was a good moment.
I kind of wish that this was going to be his last one. I have a feeling that they probably recorded something for Avengers and for Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I believe he actually recorded more than that.
Okay. Well, I kind of hoped that it would end with this one, because the way they wrote it unintentionally was perfect.
So beautiful.
For what it was.
Now, he also did one for the Spider-Man video game that just came out as well, which I haven't played the game yet, but I watched that bit. It's really good, too, actually. So Sony's doing a good job right now, I gotta say. You know, all their past Spider-Man Marvel mistakes may be well behind them at this point.
It makes me a little sad that they don't have more IP, but if this is the direction they want to go with Spider-Man, I'm on all for it. I want to watch more Spider-Man cartoons. I want to watch more Spider-Man live-action films. Bring it on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we were talking earlier, we've already got sequels and spinoffs basically confirmed for this one, which is not surprising. I mean, its reception has been so positive that even though, you know, $35 million doesn't sound like a lot, it is the December record for an opening animation film. And it did make already a third, more than a third of its budget.
And it is very rare when a non-Disney animated film takes the box office. It does not happen often.
And it's a busy month. You know, it had other movies to contend with. And it will have more this coming weekend. You know, December is pretty stacked. Thanksgiving was pretty stacked. So you have a lot of choices when you go to the movies right now. But this is probably the best thing in theaters. So.
I think it's only the second or third movie I'm going to give an A to this year.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of movies so far this year. I think we're at 27 or 28.
I think I gave Bohemian Rhapsody an A, and I think I gave Won't You Be My Neighbor an A. So, and this one is also going to get an A for me.
Yeah, I definitely would say that this is my favorite movie of the year. Not necessarily saying it's like the like objectively best necessarily. That's a difficult question, but I think it's my favorite. I can say that.
Yeah. Like I said, it's definitely my favorite superhero movie. I don't know if it's my favorite movie of the year. I don't know. I can't really think of anything that would beat it, to be honest.
That's so the thing.
It's probably, it probably is then.
Right.
But our first episode of 2019 will be talking about our favorite.
That's true. Yeah, we'll be looking back. Yeah. It's a good point. It's a good point because we'll be kicking off the year with our 2019 predictions and 2018 look back.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Mm-hmm. What else do we want to cover on this movie before we wrap things up? Anything
we'll
else?
We'll do our letter grades, but I think we've talked about it.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't anything to pick apart. So.
No,
yeah.
I just want to say that like I would be happy to see I would love to see more in this style from those other timelines. Spider-Man Noir, Peter Porker, Penny.
I want Terry Crews. For some reason, all I could think of when I left this movie was like, I really want Terry Crews to voice a villain or something in this, or another Spider-Man. How great would he be as another
well,
Spider-Man?
I love Terry. Like,
Terry Crews is just made for voice acting. I'm really upset that he hasn't done more
I know. Gosh, he would have been great in a movie like this.
He's my next Disney princess casting.
I'm in.
I love that man.
Nicolas Cage.
He's Princess Terry.
But Noir Spider-Man, like, when I think about, like, the character is super interesting to me anyway because of what it is. It's a late 1930s, you know, noir style, fighting Nazis.
He talks like the old, like gangster, or old, like, detective style.
It's how the first season of Gotham, Harvey Bullock, he talks in the first season of Gotham.
Like, fast-talking, wise-cracking, you know.
But if you wanted to give me, like, a Netflix style series that had, you know, 8 to 10 episodes a season, and it was maybe, you know,
my problem
anthology.
Is I want Avengers Noir and X-Men Noir to work with it. I want it all together, and right now there's not going to be any of those companies playing nice.
I can see that, but again, like, that's part of, you know, why I didn't really want Disney to buy 20th Century Fox. I kind of like having some of these stories segregated most of the time.
Well, I don't believe that Disney is capable of paying the same amount of attention to the X-Men and Fantastic Four that they do the Avengers. So many characters get lost in the fold that,
right,
you know, you bring on that many X-Men, like, well, I guess we're getting 10 more Wolverine movies and that's
so,
it.
So I think seeing a Noir Spider-Man series where he's by himself, just Noir Spider-Man.
It's very windy where he's at.
But it could be really cool. It could be like, you know, the next Dick Tracy kind of thing. You know, I would be really, really into that.
Especially if they did it like a really old-timey animation style, like the early like Mickey Mouse and stuff like that. You know,
I like the style he was done in.
I do too, but I think that if they went just really far into that, I don't know, it might be kind of cool.
Not
it really
so
separate
far
itself.
Back where Mickey was like constantly bouncing.
Yeah, exactly. But like near that, not like Cuphead. Red, but like, you know, getting to where animation was still early on, you
like
know,
Jack like and the Beanstalk,
like the original Superman cartoons,
yes,
Fantasia.
Like yeah. Exactly.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, and that would be cool, and I would watch that.
It really distanced itself from everything else out there if it did that. I think.
Yeah. I was just really impressed with how
like
he
a
looked.
Kid's I
was
too.
You know, it kind of reminded me a bit about like Batman the Animated Series, right, where the show was made on black paper.
Yeah,
you know, like it's kind of like that's kind of how you'd have to make it.
Yeah,
you know, and I think we're due for another show like that.
And oh God, everyone!
I don't predict it actually happening. I don't predict him getting his own movie spinoff or anything. But
I don't either. But I'm just saying, I would watch the hell out of it.
Take all my money.
So yeah, Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse. It's gets an A. A's around the board, guys.
Yep.
All right, guys. So next week, join us on
not live
Thursday.
Yeah.
Wait for the podcast to drop. It's our Aquaman review. And then we will see you in 2019.
Yeah, so we will be back the week of January. Let's see. Okay, so we're moving to Fridays for release dates. We're staying on Tuesdays for the live stream. So our first episode of 2019 will premiere on January 11th.
Yep.
Which makes Tuesday the 8th.
That's how days work,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So January 8th will be our next live episode of Screen Heroes. We'll do our 2019 predictions and our 2018 look back, and then that'll kick off our year.
Yeah. Ryan, where can people find you? What's your handles?
Well, on the internet. Oh, wait. Dang it, you ruined it. Buster props everywhere.
Yeah. Derek, your handles.
I am the Star Trek dude.
I am Siren Ray. Join us every Tuesday night on Twitch, except for next Tuesday and the Tuesday after. Join us January 8th. Listen to us Friday mornings, Thursday mornings for 2018, Fridays for 2019.
Yeah, we're at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, and Patreon. We also have a relatively new Tee Public store with designs from all of our shows. For the Heroes Podcast Network, Screen Heroes, we've got some really cool stuff out there. So please check that out. You can also tweet us at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter.
Thank you so much to Tetris and Tacos and Midnight Pearl for joining us in Twitch chat this evening.
Absolutely.
You can join us every Tuesday. But we will catch you next time, guys.
See you next year.
See ya.
Bye.